You're listening to the Parent Pod Podcast by Gymboree Play and Music with Adonica Shaw, a weekly conversation about early childhood development topics for parents with children ages 0 to 5. While the content of this show is meant to be informative, it is not meant to replace the guidance of your physician, therapist, or pediatrician.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Parent Pod Podcast by Gymboree Play and Music. I'm your host, Adonica Shaw. Now, for those of you who have been following us, you know that this September has been all about firsts here at Gymboree Play and Music. We've talked about firsts when it came to pregnancy, firsts when it comes to parenthood, firsts when it comes to navigating ups and downs with toddlers, dealing with different behaviors, and firsts even when it came to expressing and teaching children about acceptance of their own identity. But on this week's episode, we have a special treat for you because we're speaking with a woman who, in her quest to become a mother of five, had three very different first-time pregnancy birthing experiences. Josephine Atluri is known to most as an expert in meditation. Her work around overcoming adversity and finding joy is notable, and she is a well-sought-after influencer, and host of the Responding to Life podcast. But what most people probably don't know is that through her journey to become a meditation teacher and to have her own podcast, she had her own life experiences and had to face many ups and downs with IVF and international adoption and surrogacy. We had the pleasure of speaking with her on this episode so that we can get a greater understanding of what her pathway to parenthood looked like in each of those situations, and to again provide you with the conversation and the dialogue that might be meaningful to you if these are issues that you are currently experiencing and navigating in your own life. Thank you so much for being here with us, Josephine. How are you feeling today?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be here and sharing in this conversation with you, Adonica. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. So as you're aware, you know, this month at Gymboree Play and Music, we are focusing on firsts and what that journey of first-time parenthood looks like for different families, for different women, and what their journey in terms of pregnancy also kind of look like. I know that I have my own rapport with you outside of the show, but I'd like for you to start this episode off for us by telling us a little bit about your background and what it took for you to become a first-time parent.
Yes, I'd love to. So my journey into, or my path to parenthood was not traditional at all. We knew that we would have to immediately go into IVF. So that's what we did. And it, you know, we tried it for a number of years with no success. And then when we finally did become pregnant, I did lose that pregnancy in the second trimester. And it was at that point that we shifted our approach to parenthood. And we decided to adopt internationally. And that's how we were able to welcome our very first son into our lives. And after having that magical first year of being a parent, we decided to try IVF one more time, and we were able to get pregnant. I was able to carry the pregnancy, and then I gave birth to another set of twins, and then, you know, we finally had our family, and it was wonderful. But we had some frozen embryos, and I wasn't able to carry again. But we saved up for a number of years and then worked with this amazing surrogate who is just forever a part of our families and our hearts. And she carried another set of twins for us. And that is how we became this family of five kids. And it, you know, took many non-traditional routes of IVF, international adoption, and surrogacy for us to create our family. But as I like to say always, that, you know, our family is, they all came together through love. And mm-hmm. And that's how I'm here today talking to you about just about that journey and how I now help others, you know, navigate infertility and also motherhood through mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that this is a lot to discuss all in one episode, but I do want to take a deeper look here because, you know, certainly the journey through adoption, you know, and then when you consider an international adoption is one thing, IVF, its own thing, and then surrogacy, its own path. And so it seems in many ways that you've had many firsts in terms of parenthood. What were some of the things and some of the questions and feelings and thoughts that you had to work through during that adoption process? Because I know that we have families that may not be able to conceive naturally. And so they may seek to do an adoption, whether, you know, domestic or internationally. What were some of the things that you had to work through? What were some of the emotions that came up?
That's a great question. And for us, because of the timing of the adoption, there was a lot of emotional issues that we had to deal with because it happened right after, you know, we decided to adopt after we lost our first set of twins. And so after grieving that loss and grieving the expectations from that, you know, I somewhat carried that with me. It's hard not to throughout the adoption process. But I think at that point, after so many years of trying IVF, what was really weighing on me at that point was that I was just tired. I was really tired of doing all of those cycles. I was tired of, like, I was emotionally tired, mentally tired, physically tired. And I just knew in my heart that I wanted to become a mother. And at that point that I realized that families are created in so many different ways. And I was ready to try a different path. So when I went into the adoption process, there were definitely a lot of mixed feelings involved and a lot of frustration, actually, because I had spent so many years trying to become a mother, and then I had to go through all of this paperwork, all of these interviews. It was very different from IVF in that, you know, I exchanged medical treatments, I exchanged medical appointments, and I exchanged that all for now with adoption, with paperwork, legal stuff, all of the interviews that we had to do with social workers and with immigration and with legal counsel. So it was a very different path from what we were doing before. And, you know, I had to really wrap my head around that and not, you know, allow myself to feel the frustration of the process and the impatience of wanting to become a parent already after such a long journey. Mm-hmm. And to work through that. And, you know, with time, we were lucky that our process was much shorter than most, but, you know, we were able to use life as sort of a distraction. Mm-hmm. You know, there is typically a long wait with adoption. And so you find yourself going back into life, regular life, as I put in air quotes. And then all of a sudden you get a call and now it's time for you to shift finally into this path of parenthood. And it was such a different process from trying to conceive through IVF, but it was magical because that is how we started our family.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have any type of support? Did you know any other women around you in your community and your family that had tried adoption or IVF or even a surrogate when it came to that point for you?
No, actually. Well, with adoption, we knew one other couple at the time, and that's how we found the agency that we were going to work with. So I did have that one couple. I didn't know anyone doing IVF at the same time as me, at least initially. And that was really tough because we, you know, we were one of the first people of our friend groups to get married. And so thus we were one of the first to start trying. And And then back then, it really wasn't a topic that people were very open about. So it was very difficult to have a connection with other people about what we were going through. And the same with surrogacy. I didn't know anyone who had done that. And so there was a lot of isolation and loneliness back when I was doing this, some 13 years ago when it all started. And that was really tough. But I love seeing all of the different communities now and organizations that are available to men and women who are trying to become parents. Mm-hmm. And having all of those resources, really, it's so key. Even if you're not actively participating in it, if you don't feel comfortable, that's completely up to you and that's fine. But just knowing that you have a resource available to you whenever you are in your low moments or you need some sort of support, in terms of just seeing that someone else is going through it with you, maybe a different, completely different situation, that's okay. But just knowing that there are other people who are experiencing what you're feeling, there's some comfort in that. And so it gives me hope that there are all these available resources out to people. And then, conversations such as this, it's so great to be able to have these open conversations about what parenthood looks like, what families, different families look like, as it gets rid of the taboo of how families are created, of how people go through their own fertility journeys. So I love being a part of that conversation and helping others.
You have just such a powerful story, because when I think about it, I get discouraged from, maybe something doesn't go my way, and by not my way, having nothing to do with pregnancy, but like, let's say I want to go out for, a role with one of my local organizations, or I aspire to do XYZ, but I can only imagine the emotional strength and fortitude that it takes to come back from not being successful with that IVF path and that journey, because I've heard so many stories of women who have struggled through that. And not only does it take a toll on your body, but from what I understand, it's also very expensive and very costly. And so to rebound from that, so to speak, and still decide that you want to try another non-traditional route to parenthood without having a lot of people around you that have gone through that process, not that that should stop anybody, but that just seems like such a huge leap of faith. And so I'm so inspired in listening to your strength from understanding that you knew your path was going to be a little different, trying it one way, remaining healthy and hopeful, trying it another way. And then even after you were able to adopt, moving forward with IVF and then still moving forward with surrogacy. So one thing, I do want to kind of dive into a little bit more, because when I think of surrogacy, you'll have to excuse me here, but I think of like celebrities. I feel like the only people that have surrogates are like Kim Kardashian. I don't think about my neighbor or somebody I know from church or somebody that I know from a group within my community. And so for me, I would love to know more what that process looked like for you and how you might have been able to come to the conclusion that that was the route that you wanted to take, knowing that that's not something that is as common as IVF or even adoption.
That's it's a great question, and it's a very it's a hot topic right now. And you're right, you do hear more about it from celebrities, and that's, I think that in part is because of the nature of the costs of surrogacy. It really is, in comparison to the other two methods that we had to use, it's almost a combination of the two costs. So it is, we had to save for a number of years, which is why there's such a big gap between my middle set of twins and my little ones. There's a 7-year gap. And that's telling of like how long it took for us to be able to do it. And, but you know, once we decided that we had all of these, you know, we had these frozen embryos from our first, from that very last procedure, and we put so much work into getting, forming these babies that we wanted to give them a shot. And we always knew we wanted a big family anyway. Mm-hmm. So when we decided to finally save up and do that, and then when the time finally came when we could execute on that desire, it was tough because, you know, like with adoption, you had to wrap your head around the fact that you were approaching your family creation in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so we yet again had to do that, but this time it was, the issues were different in that now I had to let go of control. I had to trust not only the process, but trust this other person who I didn't really know. And I had to really just almost stand on the sidelines, is how I like to describe it. Stand on the sidelines and almost feel, I almost felt as if I was my husband mm-hmm. in this role, because you're this partner who has, is so emotionally invested in the process, but there's really not much that you can do as the supportive person. You're there for whatever they need, but that's it. And so that part of surrogacy was very tough for me to deal with. And it was just this emotional sort of roller coaster for me throughout the whole process. But in terms of just going over how it went, you know, we went through an agency, much like the adoption, and then we were given some potential surrogates, and then we interviewed them, and when we finally found a match, that's when we decided to go through, you know, all of the legal documentation, much like adoption, and then she then had to go through all the IVF sort of medical tests. So that's why I describe it almost like a combination of IVF and adoption, because there mm-hmm. were many parts of it that were very similar that were just combined, not just the cost, but all of the different pieces. And then once she, you know, had the transfer, she became pregnant. Then that was when we were able to start forging our relationship, which mm-hmm. was very different, because there isn't, you know, we have all these norms in society and growing up that we learn about how we're supposed to interact with our teachers or our coworkers or our relatives. But you don't hear about how are you supposed to interact with your surrogate. It's not very common, as we've already established. Mm-hmm. So that was something that was new for both of us. And we had to really, you know, we worked on it, but it was kind of a fine, like it was almost a dance of how much I would, you know, get updates without feeling like I was intruding on her life, and, you know, and not being just like helicoptering over her and, like we do with our kid. And so, you know, we were both very flexible, and then the bond that we had was just like, once, you know, she could start to feel the babies in her belly, that we really like started to have like conversations about being mothers and about our own children, and her just sharing her joy. And I could hear in her voice and hearing that joy that she had in these experiences. You know, part of me was jealous, but part of me was also so very thankful that she was so selfless and so giving and so kind to help us out on this big piece of our family journey. And over time we developed this great relationship. And like I said before, she's forever a piece of our lives, forever in our hearts. And they were all very different paths, and they all challenged me and my husband in so many different ways, but we took so many lessons learned from it, which is why I'm just so impassioned to help other people who are going through their own fertility journeys, to help them be mindful throughout the process, because I know how difficult it is. And then after they do have kids, to help them be mindful moms and dads so that they can, you know, really be joyful in their experience of being parents, because I know all too well how stressful it can be from the infertility all the way up into parenthood.
Mm-hmm. And so I know, you know, obviously you have this identity, right, of being a mother of five and having these really unique birth experiences and pathways and different journeys to parenthood. But aside from that, I also know that you're a meditation teacher. I know that you're a podcast host of Responding to Life and the fact that you are an infertility advocate. And so I certainly understand how there's probably a lot of life experience there that led you into this path. But I would particularly like to know, in terms of meditation, how did that help you through this process? And I don't want to assume that meditation only came about because of these life experiences, right? But was there anything that you might have used, if not meditation, to help you find a center and to keep faith even though you had to navigate a lot of rocky emotions?
So I am very transparent about this in that I wish I had meditation back when I was going through my infertility journey. It wasn't until our very last set of twins joined our family that I was now in this really chaotic state. Like, I was back to work and now I had five kids instead of three and we moved to a new city. I mean, life was nuts. And that's when I started to seek out some sort of support for my mental and emotional well-being. And that's how I found meditation. And then after just a few months of it, I became hooked and I wanted to dive deeper. And that's how I ended up going into a teacher training program. And from there, I really thought that I was just going into that program just to deepen my own experience with meditation. But after taking that program, I realized, you know what, I can bring this back to people in corporations where I had worked before as a consultant. I can bring this to parents like myself who are so overwhelmed with working and raising kids. And I can bring this also to people who are trying to become parents because I remembered how tough it was to go through that infertility process. So back when I was going through it, I wish I had it. I didn't. And the only coping strategies that I had back then, for me, it was just working out and that was it. And I think we had this conversation previously, Adonica, that, you know, self-care is such a new hot topic that it wasn't something that existed way back when. It was not for me, for sure. And so I didn't have coping strategies and it really led to this almost like an eruption at one point where I could no longer suppress all of the trauma that I was feeling that I encountered from trying to conceive. I really had to find a way, an outlet for it. And unfortunately for me, like it ended up as an eating disorder that I ended up going through like therapy. And that's finally was my breaking point of just having to deal with the emotions. But much of what I did in that therapy for that eating disorder is a lot of the stuff that I now incorporate into my meditation coaching, into my infertility workshops, because it's all stuff that, you know, it's all techniques for stress management. It's all techniques for helping you empower yourself, give you confidence and support when you hit the road bumps in life. And so that's how that all came about.
Well, I have to give it to you, the fact that even if you didn't start the journey with it, you still went and sought something to address issues that you saw rising in yourself, right? I know that you and I have offline, of course, had different conversations around self-care and the fact that it's a relatively new term. I don't know where it was hiding before the last 3 to 4 years. But it's true, right? Because I think about, what my birth journey looked like with my oldest, and she's 11 now, right? And so back then, it's kind of like, if you had a problem, you better figure out how to deal with it on your own. And the only thing you really could do might be to go to a group of girlfriends that you grew up around, but that's kind of a weird thing if, to your point, if you're the first person in your group or your friend group to get married and start having children or just to have children, irrespective of marriage. or, you know, going to family and friends to talk to them about these feelings you're having. Like, back then, it's not to say that it wasn't heard of, but it was extremely taboo. Mm-hmm. And so that versus now, where women who are having children, and I hate to say even in 2020, because I mean, 2020 is 2020. You know,
right.
There's this unique opportunity, though, that they have to latch on to some of these things like meditation, life coaching, and then, you know, having a doula even, or having other women or support systems and resources around them to help them cope with what pregnancy does to your mind, your body, your spirit, your emotional health in a way that isn't so damaging that might erupt years from now, you know?
Right.
And so it's just so interesting that in, like, you know, last, you know, you go back 10, 12, 13 years ago, where these were just non-options, to now you can hire a meditation teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've come very far, and the fact that most of us know what self-care is, and I'm sure that even if we didn't know at the beginning of the year, a pandemic sure helped us figure it out very quickly.
Exactly.
You know, I will say that's been the silver lining, is that people are now taking a second look at what it means to take good care of yourself.
Right.
What it takes to be grounded, what it takes to show up for your life, but also show up for the lives of your children in a way that is meaningful. And you're not just mom. You're not just there. You're healthy. Mm-hmm. You're vibrant. You're present. You are grateful for those small moments where they drive you crazy. And I have those. So I'm like, you know, I can, like, and I find myself going there, I'm like, I'm going to thank the universe for this moment. One day I'm going to think about this moment, and I'm going to be so thankful that I felt what I'm feeling right now. And I just can't wait to feel more, you know. So it's been quite the journey.
It has.
You know, one of the things I would like to ask you is, you know, what did your self-care routine look like aside from meditation? Was there anything else that you did with, when you had your surrogate, was there anything that you did for yourself outside of meditation?
You know, back then, still, that was, my twins are now, they're turning 5 in December. So that was 6 years ago. And for me back then, it was just hanging out with friends. I'm a big part of my life is working out. And so that was where my friend group was. And so I was able to have that as major outlet. And then I, you know, I was also busy with my 3 other kids. Mm-hmm. So that provided me with a lot of moments of joy. I mean, definitely a lot of moments of stress and, like, overwhelmed, but also really it did provide me with a lot of fun moments with them. And so, you know, it was a lot of social interaction with family, with friends, and then taking care of my mind and my body through meditation and working out. So that was, and then, you know, I would also throw in some other things of just like what you think of with self-care nowadays, or with, you know, just like facials and different like treatments to make my body feel good. And mm-hmm. and so those were different things that I threw at it, but it was really, you know, that's one thing that the pandemic has really brought to light, is the importance of connections and how we need to keep them. And so for me, that was a great way to take care of myself.
Awesome. I'm like, you know, we can go on for hours about self-care. And I'm, you know, anytime I talk to a woman these days, I'm like, you know, so what do you do for self-care? Because I feel like at the beginning of quarantine, everybody was like, oh, just do some breathing exercises, or, you know, journal. But, you know, 8 months in, you know, there's only so much journaling. And so I am just curious. I'm like, I've run out of books to write in. I'm so curious, like, what are other people doing that I have not seen a post about, or I haven't explored?
Right.
Yeah. I am trying to work out more. You know, I'm happy now that the skies are a little bit clearer because for the last, you know, week or so in San Francisco, at least the air quality has been incredibly poor. And so that little piece of joy I got every day of getting out of the house and like, all right, I'm going to go on my hike. It just didn't happen, you know? And so it's made me far more curious about what self-care looks like as a parent. And, you know, I'm not a first-time parent, but, you know, now three in, I'm very cognizant of like what that journey had to look like for me and then what the pieces of learning are that I have for myself, but that I can pass on for other women as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I have just one more question for you before we depart, you know, and I know this is kind of a loaded question because you have three very distinct paths to parenthood and motherhood. But if there were three pieces of advice you would have given yourself before each of those birth experiences or parenthood experiences, what would they be?
Oh, I really love this question. I love it. Okay. Three pieces of advice. So the first piece then would be right before IVF. And I think that advice would be you are worthy and you have value and you are enough. And to remember that about yourself, because with IVF, you get so caught up in the end result of having a child that you start to just lose sight of who you are and you become tied to the end goal. So when you're in the midst of doing it and you happen to have you don't get pregnant or there's a failed pregnancy, you start to almost associate that with who you are as a person and your value. And it becomes so demoralizing and it just really wreaks havoc on your emotional and mental well-being. And so that is one thing that I would tell myself had I had the chance before I started IVF. And then before adoption, I would tell myself to, you know, the adoption process, it was very different. There was a lot of waiting, but then when we actually got there in the country of Kazakhstan and had to stay there for a month, there was a language barrier and we didn't really quite know what the process was. So I would have told myself to trust the process, which you hear a lot of, you know, as advice for many different aspects of life is trust the process. And that really was key for that moment because we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know the language. We were at the mercy of, you know, our handlers out there and the adoption agency at the beginning. And so as much as, you know, you want to have control in life because it gives you, it makes you feel better, you know, I would have encouraged myself back then to just know that the end result would be that we'd become a family and that all the steps along the way would just be to like trust the process, go with the flow and try not to get so worked up about it because in the end, getting worked up about it, there's really no need. There's nothing that you can do about it. You're just making yourself get into the spiral of negativity and worry when if you just breathe into it and focus your energies on other things and more positive things, then you reduce that unnecessary stress. So that would be the advice for before adoption. And then finally, before surrogacy, the advice there would be to, this is a good one. I guess for me, it was letting go and be vulnerable. So, you know, for myself, it's really hard for me to ask for help. It always has been. I'm the type of woman who just wants to do everything for herself. I can prove that I can do it. And it just is faster if I can do it. And that's kind of been my MO. And so asking someone else, someone who I didn't even know, I mean, it's already hard for me to ask my friends and family, but asking someone who I didn't even know for help with this really big part of life, that was so hard. And in order to be able to do that, you really have to be vulnerable. You have to expose a part of who you are, what you need, why you can't do this, or just that you need help. And asking for help in any situation is tough. But asking when it comes to something like this, when it's so tied to like being a woman and what you should be able to do, right? That was the hardest lesson. Out of all of the lessons that we learned, that was the hardest for me, was to open up, be vulnerable, to let go of what I could not do, and to ask this person for help.
Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting. I'm thinking, like, out of all of my moments in motherhood where asking for help is the exact opposite of what we are trained to do, because I do think in some respect it's that we're kind of raised to believe that, you know, you're supposed to have this motherly instinct and that you have to have all of the answers and you're supposed to know what to do in every single situation. And then to somehow admit that you fall short somewhere and that you don't have all of the answers at all of the time, you know, I feel like the ego kind of takes a hit there. But
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think one of the things that families and first-time mothers learn, whether through pregnancy or in that first year of mothering, really is that that parenthood and motherhood is a series of events where you let go and learn. Yes. Let go, pivot, right. And learn. Pivot, let right. go, and learn. Pivot, pivot, let go, and let go, and, and let go some more, and then learn, and learn, and learn, and learn, and then pivot some more. Right. Parenthood isn't just a singular event that happens. It's not like you have a child one day or a child comes to be under your roof and it's like, oh, I am a parent. Right. Like, parenthood yeah. is a series of moments and a series of activities and events and emotions. We were constantly in that moment trying to figure it out and figure it out to the best of your ability to guide the life of this little soul, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm thankful for your advice. And, you know, I need that reminder sometimes, even though I'm not a first time parent, but for those families and for those women that are listening to this podcast, you know, I would encourage you to take Josephine's advice, you know, and just really sit with it, you know. And I don't want to be one of those, I hate to say, one of those women that you meet and they're like, oh, just you wait, because I've never really felt good when somebody said that to me. I'm so serious. Right. I feel like that's like yeah. the worst thing you can say to a woman who is expecting.
Oh,
just
yeah.
you wait, because right. it kind of invalidates where she's at right then.
Right.
But I would say that it's such an amazing roller coaster of emotions. And by letting go and surrendering to whatever's going in that moment, or going on in that moment inside of you or around you, there's a lot of learning to be had. And so that will certainly seep into your parenting style if you allow it, which is wonderful.
Yeah. Still learning after all these years.
instead of Dory, instead of just keep swimming, it's just keep learning, just keep learning. I want to thank you so much for your time today, Josephine. I do have one last question for our guests, and that is, how can they find you?
Yeah, well, it's been such a pleasure. I always enjoy speaking with you, Danica. So you can, for daily inspiration on infertility and also motherhood, you can find me on Instagram at Josephine R. Atlery. And then my website is jatlery.com. And on there, I have a number of free video meditations that you can try out, especially if you've never done it before. And then I recently started a new video segment series on IGTV, but I put it on my website. It's called the Mindful Mama Moment. And I share just some quick tips. It's like 3 minutes long each week on a quick tip on how you can be a mindful mama and really just be present as you're parenting. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. I know I follow you, so I would encourage you guys to follow her, because she's always got a lot of really good content. But I know that you've been on a series of podcasts that you typically highlight on your feed. And so if you're looking for content around adoption, IVF, surrogacy, or other women's journeys and what they looked like, you know, she's an amazing resource to follow, and she's incredibly approachable and friendly. And so if you're listening to this and you want to get even more content like these types of conversations, I would say go ahead, give her a follow, send her an email, tell her that you listened to her on this podcast. Thank you again so much for your time today, Josephine, and to all of you. We look forward to coming to you on the next episode of The Parent Pod.
To learn more about this week's episode or the content discussed in the episode, be sure to follow Jimbaree Play and Music on Facebook.